This is Karen Fresco returning with the News Gazette, dated Wednesday, May 6, 2020. We continue now with the death notices. Dorothy Anderson, Elliott. Dorothy Dot Anderson, 92, of Elliott, passed away surrounded by family on Saturday, May 2, 2020. Private graveside services will be held and a celebration of life will be scheduled for a later date. Memorials may be made to the Gibson City Area Hospital, 1120 North Melvin Street, Gibson City, Illinois, 60936. Davontae Brown, Champaign. Davontae Brown, 15, of Champaign, died at 5:30 a.m. Friday, May 1, 2020, at Carl Foundation Hospital, Urbana. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Leek and Sons Funeral Home, 1215 West Bradley Avenue, Urbana. Minnie Burke, Rantoul. Mrs. Minnie I. Schluter Burke passed away on Friday, May 1, 2020, at Memorial Hospital, Belleville. She will be buried at Hall Cemetery, Gifford, in a family service. Memorials may be made to American Lutheran Church, Rantoul, or Carl Pulmonary Rehabilitation Center, Urbana. Lux Memorial Chapel, Rantoul, is handling the arrangements. Kevin Donahoe, Urbana. Kevin Todd Donahoe, 61, of Urbana, passed away at 9:07 a.m., Sunday, April 26, 2020, at his home. Memorial services will be held at a later date. Memorial contributions may be made to the family to help with final expenses. John Harpst, Fisher. John G. Harpst, 78, of Fisher, formerly of Mahomet, passed away Monday, May 4, 2020, at his home after a short but courageous battle with cancer. There will be a graveside funeral service at 10 a.m. Friday, May 8, at Grandview Memorial Gardens in Champaign. The Reverend Joe Hogan will officiate. A celebration of his life will be held at a later date. Memorials can be made to Corn Belt Fire Protection District, Our Lady of the Lake Catholic Church, or Mills Breast Cancer Institute at Carl Foundation Hospital. Nancy Helmick, Arcola. Nancy Helmick, 73, of Arcola, formerly of Urbana, died at 11:38 p.m. Saturday, May 2, 2020, at Charleston Rehab and Health Care Center. A private graveside service will be at 2 p.m. Thursday at Woodlawn Cemetery, Urbana. Edwards Funeral Home, 221 East Main Street, Arcola, is in charge of arrangements. Alfreda Marks, Savoy. Alfreda Alice Marks, 96, passed away of natural causes on Monday, May 4, 2020. A private graveside service will be held Saturday, May 9, 2020, at the GAR Cemetery in Homer. A celebration of her life will be scheduled for a later date. Rosalie Ann Majeski, Savoy. Rosalie Ann Majeski, 78, of Savoy, died at 1:45 p.m., Monday, May 4, 2020, at Carl Foundation Hospital, Urbana. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Morgan Memorial Home, 1304 Regency Drive West, Savoy. Gregory Stevens, Allerton. Gregory A. Stevens peacefully passed away on Thursday, April 30, 2020, at his home of natural causes. If you would like, memorials may be made to Salt and Light Ministries in Champaign. Lux Memorial Chapel, Rantoul, handled the arrangements for the family. Van Sutton, Rantoul. Van Sutton, 68, of Rantoul, passed away Monday, May 4, 2020, at the VA hospital Danville after a brief illness. His ashes will be buried in Danville National Cemetery. No services will be held. Lux Memorial Chapel, Rantoul, is handling the arrangements. Paul W. Thurston, Savoy. Paul W. Thurston, 75, died Thursday, April 30, 2020, at Willowbrook Memory Care in Savoy, in much the same way that he lived, holding the hand of the love of his life of 49 years, Kathy. Donations may be made to the University of Illinois Foundation's Paul W. Thurston Scholarship Fund, supporting graduate students in educational and organizational leadership, or the Alzheimer's Association. A gathering to celebrate Paul's life will be held at a later date. Morgan Funeral Home in Savoy is handling the arrangements. Barbara E. Wafflard, Bement. Barbara E. Wafflard, 84, of Bement, died at 2:24 p.m. Tuesday, May 5, 2020, in Bement. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Heinz Funeral Home, 348 North Pyatt Street, Bement. From the sports pages, scholarships. Options abound as Underwood keeps building his next roster. By Scott Ritchie, Champaign. Illinois men's basketball currently has one open scholarship for the 2020-2021 season, but the Illini could have two or three depending on the decisions made by Ayo Dosunmu and Kofi Cockburn concerning the 2020 NBA draft. They'll have scholarships available, obviously, should they decide to return to Champaign for another season. The uncertainty of just how many of the 13 scholarships will be available is something Illinois coach Brad Underwood said was the challenge in trying to fill out the 2020-2021 roster. The Illini are in the final five for a pair of transfer guards in Chandi Brown, Wake Forest, and Jose Perez, Gardner-Webb. Both would be sit-out transfers with 1 and 2 years of eligibility remaining, respectively. We'll look for the best available, Underwood said about filling out his 2020-2021 roster. We're being very, very, very selective. I think there's a chance we could have a sit-out guy. I think there's a chance it could be at any one of a couple different positions. There's enough data out there and information now about how transfers have worked. Grad transfers in particular with success and failures. Underwood and his coaching staff, limited to working from home during the COVID-19 pandemic, have been able to dig deep into any potential additions to the roster. What matters most to the Illini coaches is fit. It's got to be about winning, Underwood said. Is somebody going to step in here and average 20 a game? Probably not, but we'll see. It's ever-changing. We're checking the portal. Another avenue for roster additions could come via 2021 recruits reclassifying into the 2020 class. Illinois targets Mac Etienne, Brandon Weston, and Michael Foster Jr. are all potential reclassification prospects. Perhaps increasing the total number of reclassification candidates for the upcoming season is the NCAA waiving test score requirements, whether it be ACT or SAT, as part of the eligibility process. That said, prospective student athletes must still have a 2.3 GPA in the 10 NCAA applicable core high school courses. Meeting that requirement means no standardized test score is needed. I would expect, with the NCAA relaxing the ACT and SAT rules, I would say we're going to see a huge group of underclassmen up if they can. Underwood said, I think that will all happen here sometime fairly soon, and maybe that's a possibility. We're in a pretty good holding pattern, but we're actively working every single day, and to be honest, we're spending a ton of time on 21 as well. Illinois men's basketball successful drive. Morgan Park duo. Miller hopes to follow same path as Dosunmu in his Illini career. By Scott Ritchie Champagne. The comparisons between Ayo Dosunmu and Adam Miller are inevitable. Both are dynamic, athletic guards. Both starred and won at Morgan Park, even teaming up for a Class 3A state championship in 2018, when Dosunmu was a senior and Miller a sophomore. Both also chose Illinois, with Dosunmu paving the way in the 2018 class for Miller to do the same 2 years later. Illinois men's basketball coach Brad Underwood understands that the comparisons between Dosunmu and Miller will come, even if he doesn't view the pair that way. Enough differences exist, though, to draw clear lines between Dosunmu and Miller. Start with their physical makeup. Dosunmu, at 6'5", has a couple inches on the 6'3" Miller, but the latter will arrive on campus at 180 pounds, just 5 pounds shy of where the all long and legs Dosunmu did as a freshman before his time with strength and conditioning coach Adam Flesher. Adam, physically, he's 6'4" and strong, Underwood said, giving Miller an extra inch height-wise. He's got great legs and a great base. Dosunmu and Miller are also different on the basketball court. Their respective styles have taken them different directions. Dosunmu is a demon in transition and developed a potent mid-range game during the 2019-2020 season. Miller can stretch the floor. Ayo was so electric, Underwood said. I've got to remember back to Ayo as a freshman to make those same comparisons. We remember Ayo here at the end of his sophomore year. Adam's an elite shooter, and yet he's got enough game that he's a really good finisher with that athleticism and that contact. I think he's a guy that can get to the foul line a ton. They've got different genetics. That's probably the biggest difference between those two. Still, Dosunmu and Miller will remain inextricably linked. What Dosunmu accomplished in his first two seasons at Illinois and what Illinois accomplished as a team in that time mattered when it came to the final stages of Miller's recruitment. Illini assistant coach Chin Coleman said Miller closely watched how Dosunmu's career played out in Champaign. I think for the most part, though, the very start of this thing was faith, Coleman said. We were selling faith. We had to have people believe in the unseen. We knew that given the opportunity with our plan and our vision, we would do what we did this year. And we would do this every single year once we got to this point. We had to have guys that believe in us. It came down to the relationships the Illinois coaching staff had formed in landing Dosunmu and then Miller. Mac Irvin Fire Director Mike Irvin brought in to Underwood and Company's vision for the program. So did Morgan Park coach Nick Irvin. So did Kwam Dosunmu, Ayo's dad and a Morgan Park assistant coach. Ayo, obviously, was strong enough to take a leap of faith and to believe in us and give us an opportunity to share our vision and see it come to fruition, Coleman said of Dosunmu committing to the Illini in October 2017, a month before Underwood coached his first game at Illinois. That happened, obviously, with a young Adam watching and looking. We recruited him early on and targeted him early on. To see it all happen the way we said it would happen this year, I think, was enough for him. It was enough proof for him to see, I can do all I want to do and reach my dreams and my goals right here at home. It's something I think he wanted to do anyway, but he had to see it in order to believe it and to join it. Him seeing it with Io, seeing it with the success we had this year that we said we would have, and the way the program is being built right now, and the momentum of what we're doing, I think it was easier for him to join. There's a chance, albeit slim, Dosunmu and Miller could team up once more at Illinois. Dosunmu is all in on the 2020 NBA draft as an early entrant. That's his dream, his goal. However, the current uncertainty of the basketball landscape, both at the NBA and college levels amid the COVID-19 pandemic, means he and his family are leaving the door cracked open for a return to Illinois. But if Dosunmu stays in the draft, Miller will be there to pick up the mantle as he did at Morgan Park, leading the Mustangs to 50 wins the past two seasons and becoming a go-to scorer in the process. We're getting one of the most dynamic players in the country, Coleman said of Miller. He can shoot it with range. He can shoot it off the bounce. He can get to the basket. He's so athletic with his physicality, with his body already being physically fit and prepared. A great kid, an unbelievable kid, in terms of who he is character-wise. He is a hard worker. He works on his game constantly. I know right now he's going constantly because he isn't able to spend 20 hours in the gym. It goes without saying we're getting a really, really, really good player, one of the best players in the country. Jim Nolan, Northwestern engineer, thinks he's found a better way to farm. Has achieved momentous productivity increases from about 45 bushels an acre of corn back then to an average of 180 today, with farmers in my area sometimes getting 300 bushels per. Much of the credit goes to Big Chem, the companies that turned from producing the munitions that helped win the war to stimulating farm yields with NPK, nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium, and chemicals for killing pesky weeds and pests. All this has been a mixed blessing. The relentless chemical drenching of farm and yard soils has been depleting our ground of its lifeblood, that is, the organic material that helps percolate growth. At the same time, huge amounts of excess NPK are running off the fields, down streams and rivers, into an ever-expanding hypoxic dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico, now larger than the state of Massachusetts, where all life is suffocated. I am amazed that attorneys general of Texas and Louisiana have not joined hands to sue states in the Midwest, as well as the chemical companies, for their continuing travesty. After all, everyone, farmers, chem companies, federal and state EPAs, know they have a gargantuan problem. They simply don't know how to fix it. Enter Donald Hay, a Northwestern University PhD engineer. Hay has devoted most of his 70-plus years to mitigating environmental problems, often with a market-driven approach. Founder of the Wetlands Initiative and Wetlands Research, two Illinois groups, Hay and his associates have developed big plans to, get all this, generate much more income for riverbank farmers than they make today. Suck off the excess nutrients before they reach the Gulf. Reduce flooding and offer boating, fishing, and scenic walking trails for you and me. How to Make More Money for Farmers Along the Rivers? And this is key, as nothing will happen unless farmers can be satisfied. Hay proposes that riverbank farmers transform their land from corn and beans to a new kind of farming, what Hay calls nutrient farming. I find the term a little awkward, but it means creating wetlands that would act like sumps to absorb, bury, and reuse the chemicals before they reach the rivers. In return, these nutrient farmers would be paid handsomely by polluters, municipalities, chemical companies, maybe even other farmers, ultimately, for the external costs they have imposed on society. Right now, wastewater treatment plants can be required to buy pollution credits to win the EPA permits they need to operate. You have heard the term cap and trade. Nutrient farmers would be paid for their environmental good deeds. Hay has a grandiose vision that long stretches of land along rivers of the Mississippi River Valley from the Dakotas to Ohio be turned into riverine national parks, where corn and bean fields would be turned into nature's playground. Since all this sounds way too good to be true, Hay is already working to prove his concept via pilot projects at several locales in Illinois. Near Ottawa, not far from Starved Rock State Park, he is hoping to restore a parcel of floodplain that was once farmed, then mined for clay, and is now covered with mine tailings and weeds. Hay proposes to grow wetlands and harvest carbon, nitrogen, phosphorus, and other pollutants being emitted by upstream municipalities and farms. Near Peoria, along with leaders at Wildlife Prairie Park, Hay seeks to restore the channelized Kickapoo Creek and rebuild a pool and riffle canoe trail from the park to the Illinois River. All along this restored creek, the wetland pools would extract carbon, nitrogen, and phosphorus. And in deep southern Illinois, where the Ohio and Mississippi meet, Hay would like to repurpose thousands of acres in levee districts for a large-scale project to demonstrate the benefits of using wetlands for harboring floodwaters, sequestering pollutants, and creating wildlife habitat. Hay predicts the nutrient farm concept could absorb a big slice of the pollutants headed toward the Gulf of Mexico. Nutrient farms deployed across the upper Mississippi River watershed, he believes, could ultimately begin to shrink the dead zone. Hay badly needs a clout-heavy political champion or two, say, congressmen on the right committees in Washington, and maybe a Midwest governor or two. The promise of Hay's concept is too attractive not to be tested in a number of places at modest cost. If the pilots prove out, politicos in the Midwest and the Gulf states could come out smelling like a fragrant wetland, American lotus. It is a better and more profitable way to farm, certainly along our rivers. John Nolan was a senior fellow and political science professor at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign. He has worked for three unindicted governors and published a weekly newspaper in central Illinois. Editorial: The Numbers Don't Lie. A disastrous state revenue report reveals only a portion of the financial damage caused by the coronavirus pandemic. State officials this week replaced generalities with specifics of what has become the rolling disaster of the coronavirus pandemic and economic lockdown designed to limit its spread. The perfect storm slams into April receipts as base revenues drop $2.7 billion. Fiscal year 2020 now down $1 billion as earlier gains released, states the headline of a recent report prepared by the state's Commission on Government Forecast and Accountability. If that sounds deeply concerning, it's because it is. The report documents the decline in economic activity and the revenue it generates for the state that will make it extremely difficult for the state to meet its financial obligations. Like Humpty Dumpty, Illinois sat on a wall and then took a great fall. How long it will take to put it back together again, assuming that's even a possibility, is impossible to say. The decline in reported revenue was reflected by reductions in the big three of state sources: personal and corporate and sales taxes. State personal income taxes dropped by nearly $2 billion. Corporate income taxes fell by nearly $500 million. Sales taxes dropped by $143 million. The state will get some of that money back because Governor J.B. Pritzker, following the lead of President Trump, pushed the income tax filing deadline from April 15 to July 15. At the same time, Pritzker has made it clear that he has no choice but to rewrite the proposed 2020-2021 budget he released in February and do so in a way that reflects a financial reality that is even more grim than before the pandemic. The governor, obviously, is praying for a federal bailout, and Illinois, like other states, will get help. But it's hard to imagine the federal government, which has to borrow to raise the money it intends to pass along, can provide enough support to avoid a hard budget landing in Illinois. Further exacerbating the state's problems is that its dire financial standing, debts, deficits, and underfunded pensions, left it uniquely vulnerable to the kind of disaster state officials were betting would never happen. Indeed, budget planning was based on the continuation of a record-strong economy that has been driven into recession, perhaps even depression, by the lockdown put in place throughout much of the country. Illinois' fiscal year expires June 30, and questions abound. The commission noted that with 2 months remaining in the fiscal year, gross first personal income taxes are now down $1.113 billion, or $913 million net. Gross corporate income taxes are off $377 million, or $273 million net. While gross sales taxes are clinging to a $61 million gain, $102 million net, it is also expected to soon fall into negative territory. If those numbers are not bad enough, they're plenty bad, they'll get worse even if Pritzker decides to try to thaw the economic freeze he's ordered. As we move forward over the remaining months of the fiscal year, the impact of the coronavirus is expected to continue as job losses, impacts on business, and severely curtailed economic activity will add to the state's financial fiscal stress, commission analysts stated. This has been Karen Fresco with the News Gazette, dated Wednesday, May 6, 2020. I look forward to reading with you again soon.